is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. How are you guys doing? I got to tell you something. I am having so much fun with this whole impeachment thing. It really just, I got to tell you, like, I realized today why I'm so into it. And it's because I actually feel like pissed off at all the people in charge of everything, especially a certain group of men that are a certain age and a certain race. And I just love watching them all squirm. And none of this really, I myself am privileged enough that none of this really affects me that directly, because I am very privileged that it doesn't. I'm not, you know, whatever, in their line of fire. So I am able to just kind of look at it as a play, and it's fascinating. I am really enjoying it, and that's perverted. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I have such an incredible guest today. I mean, I know I say that every week, but this week it really, no. Henry Flower is here, and he's actually kind of got, I think he's got a lot of buzz around him. And he's a really, like, I really, really like his music and his performance. So I'm psyched about that. So I'm going to get to that in a minute. But first, I want to tell you about our Drive to Five campaign, because you know what? It's fabulous. You know what's great? So we're doing this fundraiser, right? Drive to Five. But what's actually kind of cool about it is that we have these T-shirts. And if you go to Drive to Five, we have these T-shirts, right, that we had made just for this campaign, Radio Free Brooklyn Drive to Five T-shirts. So you can get one if you donate just a little bit of money. And it's such a good thing to donate to, because we're really putting a lot. Do you know how much pressure the people, the hosts here have to raise money for this station? Help me out. Okay. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/drive to five. Get a T-shirt. By the way, I made the Chanel one, but Cosmo Vinyl, who used to be he worked with The Clash. Get his. Everybody loves his. So Henry Flower's here, and I just want to give you in my own words what I think about Henry Flower. Okay. First of all, a lot of what I think about Henry Flower is positive, mostly because I first heard about him through Jocelyn Simone, who is We Color Live, which is a production, management, music, everything. They have a lot of live shows, lots of stuff. And Jocelyn is, to me, kind of like the word, the final word on music. And I always really love what I hear when I go to the salon, or, you know, Pickthorn Salon or wherever. But the enthusiasm she put behind Henry Flower really stood out to me. So when my husband Phil and I went to see Henry Flower, I was really, really just thrilled, because Henry is really weird. And I like really, really weird shit. And I was just surprised that I didn't know that Jocelyn and I had such taste in common. And so there's so many reasons why I'm really glad that Henry's here. I'm going to introduce him, and he's going to tell you a little bit about his music. And then Jocelyn's here too, and I want you to hear a little bit about We Color Live. So hello, Henry.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. It is a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So tell us a little bit, the reason he's here right now is because pretty soon, January 29th, he'll be performing, they're going to be releasing a single at the Sultan Room. So Henry, tell us a little bit about like your music and your, you know, what your performance is like, and then Jocelyn can tell us about the Sultan Room and the show.
Yeah, it's our release show for our single that's coming out called The Waiting Room. The music, the performance is sort of my spiritual practice. It's like a secular spiritual music. So I try to create that sense of, like, you know, I don't know if you've ever been tricked into believing that there's a God, but that's sort of the feeling I'm trying to create at the shows, where you like feel this sense of oneness with everything, and or this sense that there is something greater than yourself. Yeah, so it's sort of a,
guys, that's real. I know it sounds I know it sounds big, but I'm telling you, it's a really original performance. It's the real deal. So, Jocelyn, tell us about the Sultan Room. Tell us about We Color Live. Tell us the details about the show.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
So, We Color Live, we've been in Bushwick for a while. Got pushed out because of a fire in our salon studio. But we've hosted a music festival called Color Me Bushwick, and probably had about, over the past few years, maybe 300 bands play in the salon. And in 17 and 18, Henry played. And man, we've really just been fans ever since we met him. So anyway, so the Sultan Room, it's on the 29th. We have Henry Flower, J.W. Francis, Big Bliss is playing, Victor Longo, and then our client and longtime friend Julia Cumming. She's going to be DJing and hosting the night. So.
She's a front woman for Sunflower Bean, folks, in case you have heard of, have, whatever. Okay, and so now we're going to, actually, these guys, you know what they're going to do? They're going to give us 30 seconds of the song, of the song they're going to be releasing in a couple weeks. So I'm excited. Tell us about it, Henry, just a few words.
Yeah, it's called Waiting Room. I wrote it when I was waiting for a friend at a pediatric cancer clinic. I was sort of moved by a clown who came in and was making all these kids who had these really difficult situations, make them laugh and feel joyful. And I was feeling down about a breakup and all this stuff. And obviously about my friend who was going through treatment, and just seeing their perspective change because of somebody's actions and performance was so moving to me that I just started writing and writing and writing. And yeah, it became this song, and I made it with that friend. And it's about feeling the love when there's a lot of darkness.
Whoa.
Yeah. So okay. Here's a little snippet of that song.
Wow, that was that's a powerful intro to that song, Henry. Are you going to be saying that on stage when you introduce it, do you think?
We'll see how the non-spirit moves me.
Oh, okay. We're going to wait. All right, so back to you guys. I'm talking to you listeners, the whole, like, you know, three or four, maybe, I don't know how many people, but anyway, here's
3 or 4,000.
3 or 4,000.
Yeah,
it could be. Here's the thing about Henry. I'm going to tell you guys, because this is what's so weird about Henry and what I really want to find out about. And I've already, he said he's going to talk to us about it. So talk about psychological complicated background. Whoa.
It's a Freudian nightmare in there. Yeah,
it is. And I've got two different ways of describing it that I'm looking at. So he was born into a cult in Iowa, right, Henry?
Correct.
And then you grew up meditating and moving around the world with a psychic mother who claims to remember being born.
Yeah, you can't make that up.
And I'm not.
I can't.
You're not either. Do you really believe, I want to say more, but do you really believe that your mother does actually believe being born, that do you believe that about her?
Yeah, she says it candidly, like every other Christmas she talks about it.
And the way she talks about it sounds real to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. Like,
you don't have any doubt about it.
No, I mean, she's a an artist and creative, and she's definitely like romanticizes things, but she speaks pretty candidly about it, and she can go into detail about those things.
Okay. Now, also, it says she's a psychic. Do you believe she's a psych? Do you believe she's psychic?
Yeah, I believe she's got a gift for intuition. I don't believe in the psychics in the windows, like in the storefronts.
No, I know. That's.
Yeah. But she did like help a lot of people, and people would come to the house, and there was definitely like an energy exchange that was happening, and people were.
Is she predictive, or is she just perceptive? Or
she's perceptive. She'd kind of ask questions and tell people what their path was when they couldn't see it, sort of mm-hmm. thing. And mm-hmm. and when I was like seven or so, I remember she was having trouble seeing her own path. And mm-hmm. so she like sat me down and kind of gave me a tutorial on how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think at that age, you like, you know, to me, this was completely normal. I didn't think.
Yeah. Santa Claus is normal. Yeah, everything's normal.
Right. Exactly. You know, so and she was like meditating and like trying to fly and do all this stuff. And that was all like, that was just part of my upbringing. So I did what she asked. I was a good boy at that age and told her what I thought her path was. And she was like blown away and thought she like, you know, that I'd given her insight that was accurate. So I don't know.
Wow. That would give a child confidence.
Yeah. Until you like get to public schools and they, you know,
when you think about
call
that,
you a liar.
Come on, you know, but kids are cruel. So when you think back about that now, when you're telling me about that, how do you feel about that incident? Like, do you feel like that was great that I was able to help her? Do you feel like that was too much responsibility put on you? Like, what's your feeling about it now?
Oh, it was great. It was special.
It's a precious memory for you.
Yeah, precious. It's very precious. I always feel like sad when I hear people's stories and they're not like out, they're not like crazy or
they're
something.
Not like yours.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean. Yeah. They're nothing like yours.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a weird, cool way of parent. Like that's a very weird, like most people do not take their kids that seriously. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. She had to like treat me like an adult because I had to take care of my brother while she was working and stuff. So
oh, really?
It was great.
So,
I mean, feel lucky.
Okay. I just want to finish. I want to finish up why your background's so weird.
Yes.
To you guys, the people who we're doing this all for you listeners. This is for you. No, this isn't for my health. Okay. All through my childhood, she meditated. We fled a cult, practiced Judaism for a year, and then she became a born-again Christian. She was and is still a seeker. At 14, I went to a punk show. There I witnessed, I'm reading what Henry said. There I witnessed and felt the drive to save people with music performance and experience the way I was saved as a young adult. At 16, I left home and had been writing music and practicing a sort of secular spirituality, or music is the prayer, ever since. So I want to hear about your background. And I will say, and I was saying this before, I don't know if you heard this, Jocelyn, but I was saying it to Henry, that the place where Henry's music comes from doesn't seem to me the place where most musicians' music comes from that I notice. So I will say that, Henry, your performance and your music does seem to come from a genuinely original place. I mean, I don't know what that is, but I want to, this is my goal is. Mm-hmm. I want to find out more about that place where the music comes from. So tell me about, okay, well, first of all, just to shorten the thing, I know that you were in Switzerland and your mom and you and your younger brother left when you were four. Start us there.
We were in Switzerland. But they got a divorce. My mom, you know, we went to Iowa and we moved into a trailer park and we started over, and that's sort of like where my memories begin. And it was a cult in Iowa. They don't call it a cult because that's not good press, but
what does that mean? I
don't want to like throw it under the bus. There's like a lot of good that comes out of it.
Yeah.
But it's, and then there's a lot of corruption and craziness.
I just want to clarify the word cult, because we're reacting to the negative connotation, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's negative. It was definitely, it can be very positive. It kept you and your family together, right? Mm-hmm. But can you just say like what the main focus of the cult was? Was there a leader? Was it a religion? Was there a leader? Did you, you know?
There's a spiritual leader who is enlightened, or that we all believe to be enlightened. Mm-hmm. And he basically, the cult was based around meditation and like the science of meditation. So it was trying not to be a religion. They call it a movement, or a practice. Mm-hmm. So they try to make it sound like it's not, very,
leader, authority figure.
Yeah. Or that like you don't have to have a set of beliefs to be able to do this. But then as you climb the rungs of like, inevitable hierarchy. Yeah. You know, you start, seeing the power structures, and you start seeing like where the money is going. And we basically, my mom is really talented, and we had a lot of money, when my parents were together. So when we, when they split, a lot of that money just like went into this movement, and we ended up like very broke. And that's how I like,
that sounds sad. Or
Yeah, it was good. It gave me perspective. I mean, it was not easy for my mom, and I feel bad for her, but I'm glad I wasn't like...
Do you feel like your mom was ripped off or coerced or something like that? Like, what's your feelings about it?
Yeah, she was ripped off, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, she was a part in it. It wasn't like money was stolen out of our account. She was like giving it.
Right.
But, you know.
And also, I mean, like, let's give your mom some credit, because here's a woman probably pretty young with two kids living in a trailer park in Iowa, just moved there by herself from Switzerland. So being part of a group is
she
was vulnerable, and that's how that happened, right?
Yeah, but you know, we immediately had a community, and it was there's lots of Indian music. It's
American,
it's like based
Indian?
Around it, well, it's based or, around no
Indian,
Eastern Indian, yeah. It's the like guru is in Indian, and so there's a lot of like, you know, I was like learning Sanskrit and learning about like Hindu religion.
Yeah, it's not the experience necessarily. It's what,
but that
the path, the whole, like in context, it wasn't because of the money.
It was really it was really peaceful, and it was
if they hadn't taken. No, because so that must have been a big deal that, like, so how did you get out of that, or what happened there?
Well, we just ran out of money, and there's not a lot of work for what my mom was doing at the time, which is, she was like a creative director, advertiser, person. I don't know.
Wow.
She had like her own company.
She had a real job.
Well, she had her own company, and there's just not a lot of like.
Creative
direction. Yeah, there's not a lot of business except for working for this organization, which she did. And that organization, like, basically kind of dried up. We ran out of money, and they moved us to North Carolina, where they were, like, starting. They bought a mountain, and they were starting a, like, a new,
offshoot?
Yeah, and it was supposed to be, like, what do you call it? Like an oasis, not an oasis, a,
retreat.
Yeah. Right.
Well, whatever, did your mom wind up being disillusioned by that?
Yeah.
And okay. And were you disillusioned? How did you feel? How old were you?
By the time we moved to North Carolina, I was like 9.
And your brother?
He was 4 years younger. So,
And so you moved to North Carolina, and then what happened? Did you shoot? what happened? She left, you guys left the cult?
Yeah. She got, we had this like run of really, really bad luck that she attributes to like her not knowing how to like cleanse her energy after giving lots of mm-hmm. psychic readings and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she was doing a lot of that and doing the meditation and we just had insane, like a laundry list of terrible things happened. Mm. And it ended with her basically dying and coming back to life in the ICU. And then she like thought she saw an angel and she started
dying. What?
Yeah.
What?
She got she got this really rare, this rare disease or something where she basically got a tumor that grew in her throat. It wasn't,
Jocelyn,
it was benign.
You know this story, right?
A different a version. Bit. Or not a different version. I've heard not all
pieces
not really.
Of it.
Pieces
yeah.
of it.
Okay.
Intrigued.
So,
no, we're going deep here. I don't, yeah, this
okay.
is like,
all right.
This,
so what happened? So she got, asking, go ahead,
yeah,
I'm
she,
sorry.
She, no, she, well, she couldn't breathe. She like went to the hospital, you know, and they were like, you're probably not going to make it. You have to go into surgery right now. And then she was in the hospital for a couple months and,
oh my God.
And we weren't allowed to see her because kids aren't allowed to go into the ICU. And we were just bouncing around staying with friends. And I didn't know what was going on. Eventually, she somehow what? Made it through. It was, the doctor said it was like a one in a million, like nobody survives this. But at some point, my mom tells it that she was raised in like Catholic boarding schools and mm-hmm. stuff in Europe. Mm-hmm. So, I think there's like a little bit of this that's like buried deep in her psyche somewhere. And she had obviously, she's like sort of a hippie and she like got away from all that. And then in this moment, they had to like resuscitate her. She had, like gone into the void and she saw an angel who was like, do you like you, all this pain can stop. You can come with us basically, or you, you know, or you can try to go back and it's going to be very difficult or something like that. And she was just like, my boys. And you know, that's how she says it. And she came, fought through for us, I guess.
How did that affect you? Like, how does a kid, I cannot imagine how you as, were you nine? What effect or how you process that, or you're going to have to be in therapy for a long time for that. Jesus.
I don't know.
Do you think it had a permanent effect on you? Do you remember how it felt at the time?
Yeah, I remember not really getting it. It's weird. I remember just staying with friends. And I didn't understand, I didn't get it. I remember seeing Nirvana on MTV and we didn't have television growing up. So it was like the first time I saw MTV and I saw It Smells Like Teen Spirit. And that's like the strongest, I remember just being like, I was connected with that song so much. And then I remember, you know, seeing her at the hospital when she was like starting to recover. That's... Other than that, I don't know.
Do you remember being afraid? Do you remember feeling like abandoned? Do you remember like thinking, do you remember like being curious or was it scary or? You don't remember any of that?
Yeah, I don't
okay,
really.
Okay, well, good, because we're going to have to talk about that in another session. We're going to really have to have some pre-association.
Yeah, I think I need to.
We're going to have to get those memories back.
Bring a hypnotist in here and we'll dive deep.
And what about your relationship with your younger brother throughout that? Did you?
He was such a like a happy-go-lucky kid. Mm. I was really quiet. I didn't really talk and I didn't really express myself as a kid. So, he was just like, he was always great. He was always really happy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, later he became dark.
Is that right?
But you know, he's good now. It's mm-hmm. just, but yeah, at that time he was mm-hmm. my little, like, you know, I was protective of him and he mm-hmm. was making me laugh. And mm-hmm.
do you think that maybe having him to focus on as somebody that you needed to take care of kind of maybe helped in a way?
Yeah, I was really concerned with making sure he was okay, and I remember like getting feeling responsible for him.
So you put all your worry right onto him.
Yeah.
Good parenting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was that there's other crazy stuff we have to get to, but was that, that seems like a big moment. Was that a definitive moment? Is that how your mom got into Judaism? Do you think that was a definitive moment in upbringing, that whole experience?
Yeah. She recovered and we moved to Connecticut to, be with her brother. And everything changed after that.
And then what happened after that? Where were your grandparents in all this? Where the fuck are they?
Father's side, you know, not around. And her father committed suicide when she was really young.
Oh, and that's a big one.
And the mother was in Germany and sick with, she had cancer. So it was just, it was just me and my brother and her, and we were a good team.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you moved to Connecticut and she converted to Judy. You all converted, or what happened in Connecticut?
I just remember her like kind of searching. We met some people who were like part of that cult who were Jewish, because you're allowed to be religious and be in this cult, sort of like Genghis Khan or something. He was, anyways, that's another story. But her father was Jewish, so she was like, I don't know, and we moved to this great town in Connecticut that's like 50% Jewish. So I don't know, there was just, oh, let's try this and like try this new community. And so we were doing that for a bit and that was fun.
Did you go to synagogue and all that?
Yeah.
I'm a Jew.
Yeah. Yeah,
Did you have Hebrew lessons?
No, we didn't get that far. I don't know.
We
kind of just did
Jews
the menorah.
Cool. I grew up with Jews. They can be okay.
My best friends were Jewish and that was like a cool whole new world. And
Was that more of a stable? That sounds like the whole thing sounds really unstable. The whole upbringing that you had.
Does it feel that way looking back?
Did you ever worry about having food or being warm enough?
Yeah.
You worried about being warm enough? Having food? I mean, you worried about having food?
Warm, we were like, you know, it was never, I wasn't like, the heat was on, it was just low. And food, we had, you know, it was great at the beginning of the week. And then it was, you know, we go shopping once a week and then start.
And we were
on like food stamps and stuff. And so, you know, it was okay. She was good at, I'm really grateful. We were fine.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? I've been to Africa and stuff. It's just like, we were great.
No, that's all relative. I just want these, you listeners out there in your big fancy homes and like your cushy lives to have some perspective. That's all.
It's great. It gives you humility. I'm like super grateful for what I have. And
So it's time for another Station ID already. Can you believe that? I want to thank everybody for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Dr. Lisa and Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Send me an email. Go to the thing. Go to our RadioFreeBrooklyn.org site. You can get downloads of all our archives and everything. Sign up for our newsletter and stuff like that. And I'm here with Henry Flower, who is going to be performing at the Selton Room on January 29th in a show with a whole bill, a whole lineup of people in a show titled Waiting Room of the Great Beyond. It's only $12 at the Selton Room. And Henry, we're going to hear another song from Henry Flower now, right? What song, guys?
We're gonna play As Above, So Below. This is my breakout hit.
And what's it about? What's it about?
It's about balance, about finding the balance between the light and the dark.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
There's meaning in the things we don't understand.
Wow. Love it. I just love that. That's great. It's really enjoyable. Really enjoyable. Okay. So anyway, you know, so here's the thing, guys. We only have like a half an hour left, and I want to get to like the rest of Henry's story, and then I want to grill him about like his relationship with like spirituality and music today. So I'm going to I'm just going to skip over this one part about where he got in. I think you got into music at this punk show. You went to a punk show, and then all of a sudden it was like the world opened up for you a little bit with music. It says here in your bio, it says here, at 14, I went to a punk show. There I witnessed and felt the drive to save people with music performance and experience the way I was saved as a young adult. So there was something about saving people in there. Did you want to save people? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's not, yeah. Well, I just, for me,
it's compassion, really. I know you don't like think like.
Yeah, that. Yeah. I'm not trying to be.
I know you don't
a,
think you're God.
Right.
we know this. We get
Well,
that.
I don't talk about that, but. No. I don't have like a guru complex, and I like clearly see the like positives and the negatives of that. I think, if somebody tells me, yeah, anyways.
You felt like you were part of a group, and that like
yeah,
these were people that you could help and be part of and add to, right? Is that what you're talking about?
My okay, mom so was then, part of all these communities, and then it was the first time I felt like I was part of one.
You got that, that you're like, this is who
this
I am.
My people.
So it probably like help you understand that like inside of you, you were a musician. Did you know that, or that you were, that music was your way of expressing yourself? Did you know that before?
I was just writing poetry and then playing punk music on the side, and then that punk band broke up, and I realized I could put the two together and do my own thing.
You know, it's interesting because what your mom has demonstrated, I think perhaps, is that like you can change and find a brand new whole entire world and universe like right away. Like she's really brave.
Yeah.
Fucking brave, man. I'm going to call that brave. Courageous.
Oh, she's the bravest person I know. Yeah.
And you guys have a good relationship today?
Yeah, we have a great relationship now.
Cool.
Not when I was going to punk shows, but now we do.
When you were a teen. So tell me about how you left home at 16, because that's weird too.
Yeah.
Jocelyn, how old were you when you left home?
Oh my gosh.
You haven't left home yet. You go back there all the time.
It's true. I maybe 20.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's normal. Yeah. I went to college at 8. That's not okay. So what happened there?
She would like date guys, and they were all terrible. But she was great in that she asked my opinion all the time, and she met this guy on eHarmony, like you know, forward thinker.
Is your mom hot? Tinder. I bet she's hot.
She's beautiful.
Yeah,
yes.
And like really like cool. Guys like her, right?
She's eccentric sort of. So, you know,
yeah.
She's special.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
Some people don't get her. And
but, yeah. So if you like that, you like her.
Yeah. And as a kid I was always embarrassed by her eccentricities and stuff. But now I love them. Anyways, she, you know, I hated basically every guy she would bring home, and then eventually she had this long she met this guy on eHarmony. He lived in Kansas. He came, and for the first, my mom, as always, was like, "What do you think of him?" And I was like, "I don't hate him." And that was all she needed. And then they got married.
And how quickly did they get married?
They probably knew each other for a year. They'd seen each other a few times, and he had a bigger house, you know, in Kansas,
She moved to Kansas from Connecticut.
She was like, well, you know, and she was like, we're all going to Kansas. And she had made a promise to me that we wouldn't move anymore because we moved around a lot. And so I was like, well, you promised we wouldn't move. I like my friends. I'm like playing music here. You know, I'm not going. And then she fought me on that for a while. And then eventually, she was like, okay, you can stay. And, you know, she thought I'd join her in a couple months when my money ran out or something. And I just got a job and started paying rent, and a lot of people helped me out.
Where were you living?
Just in like basements and attics and
were you renting your own room? You didn't have anybody making dinner for you?
No, I was staying with friends, families and stuff, but and like giving girlfriends, them money. Family. Yeah.
Chicks.
Yes.
Did you get to sleep in the girls' room at that age?
That was not part of the rules. Like, and, it was not.
And what
allowed,
about your little brother? But you did anyway.
And then, so, yeah, my brother went to Kansas. And,
oh, okay. So then, you were really on your own then.
Yeah. And then by this time, my mom was like very Christian too. And so was that guy. And so they went, and my mom, you know, and then my brother became a Christian. Mm-hmm. It was just like.
How were you feeling then? Were you like pissed off? Were you scared? Were you like.
I was very dark and like, you know, on the inside, and music was my place where I could be that. Mm-hmm. And then I was like kind of a jokester and kind of coming out of my shell because I was mm-hmm. really shy. But
did you have friends?
Yeah, I had some really good friends in Connecticut.
And chicks. That's like, you had chicks?
And
you did well with the girls. A cool guy on his own. Cute. He's really good looking, ladies.
I was awkward.
Henry's cute.
Thanks. I was awkward and I don't know. Yeah. No, I wasn't.
Girls love that. Anyway, yeah. you really made it. And then did you go to college? You went to college. So what, how'd you get to go to college after all that?
I got a swimming scholarship. I was an
Henry
athlete.
Henry the swimmer. Mm-hmm.
And then I quit that because my calluses kept falling off and I couldn't play guitar. So, and the coach was manipulative. But yeah, he was great.
But that's how you good. You've got really good survival shit, man. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Yeah,
you learn. Yeah, your mom. Wow,
it's all my mom.
Yeah,
her. And, yeah, and then. Well.
So I'm really curious. Like, I mean, I find this really interesting. So I'm thinking about your mom, and I'm thinking about how Catholicism has a lot of hope. I'm not a religious person myself, so take it for what it's worth. But it's got a lot of hocus pocus to it and stuff like that. And I could see how your mom going to like might have been set up for those kinds of experiences and stuff like that, and how it could get transferred onto you, and how like there's a lot of really positive things about that, like community, humility, probably survival. There's a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I still am confused. I want to understand like what the role of like spirituality or this kind of thing has in your music and your own beliefs now today.
I think bouncing around between the different religions gave me perspective. Especially when you're a kid and your like mind is a sponge and studying all those things. Then I just saw the similarities between them, and then, you know, and then going to school and being, I eventually ended up at a really liberal, like crazy school in Vermont. And we were just taught to think critically. And I think just reading like Joseph Campbell and stuff and just seeing, drawing all the lines, I realized that, it was not all untrue. It was just not all true, you know? Mm-hmm. And, there was just something, you know, to me, if so many people believe so strongly in these religions that they would die for, there's gotta be something to it. So for me, the only thing I felt really strongly about was music, but music isn't a religion, but music is a part of all religions. And I just started drawing those lines. And to me, there was, I just knew so many musicians who were just atheist and didn't want to even think about spirituality, which and spiritual, I wish there was even a different word for it, because I also like when I moved to New York, got really involved in this like new age community, but also always as the observer.
You're vulnerable to community.
It's always so out of curiosity. I'm never like.
So you weren't part of it. You were an observer, as you just said.
I mean, I was in it, but I didn't buy it. You know what I mean? But I thought it was so cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. So Henry Flower was a project that it was really important to me to make have that level of depth. And maybe it sounds like pretentious or something, but yeah, it was just important for me to like really get to the heart of something without making anyone feel alienated by it. So we've sort of like created this like fake religion about the infinite void. And
that's really so you, in a certain way, I mean, I've read about the infinite void. I think I heard you talk about it a little bit. Why don't you explain that concept to us?
The infinite void is just like everything that isn't something, right? So everything in this room we can like explain and try to like explain with science. And then everything else that's like you can't feel or touch, I mean, touch or see or smell or whatever, is something else.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is explained with people's, with religions. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel comfortable using those and using that language. And so I've created this idea that it doesn't really have any answers. There's no like scripture, but the idea is that like I still think it requires attention. Like I don't know, to be atheist and just be like, I can explain everything with science feels like really sad to me. Like I love the magic and I love, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at Catholicism and the stories and stuff in it, it's like crazy. There's like dragons and stuff, you know, and I like Lord of the Rings and Star Wars and I like the Force and
oh, nerd.
So yeah, total nerd. And, and I think, the infinite void is just my little, it's my way of framing something that's really important to me without boxing anyone out.
You know what I love about the way you explain that?
Mm.
That it was hard to explain.
Yeah.
And it is hard to explain because it is hard to explain what that is.
Well,
there's no words
right.
for it.
And somebody, you know.
And it felt very real. That's what I'm telling you guys.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it felt real, guys. It's like explain. We can't even explain what he's explaining.
Yeah. Well, it's the inexplicable. That's like what I'm interested in.
But what happens when science actually comes up with new theories as like they finally prove like this is true or that's true?
I mean, yeah, they
things
proved,
are provable
yeah,
that
sure.
haven't been proven yet. So where did those fit in?
Well, science is always, I mean, physicists and like quantum physicists will tell you that they, like it's always evolving. I mean, they told us there were 9 planets and that was proven, you know, and then now what? Pluto's not a planet. It's just, it's always going to.
So you're open-minded about it. You're flexible about it.
Right. And I think the point is that there's. You know, what's most dangerous right now, especially in the information age, is people who think that they have the answers. I think that's the scariest thing. You know, like, I feel like, you know, Trump is always like, he's like got the, you know, he's got an answer for everything, sort of. He's like, mm-hmm. he's like, this is the way this is, and this is the way that is. That's like, that's scary to me. Like, I would much rather be like, these are all possibilities. Like, let's consider all mm-hmm. these and... I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say that I think that you're moving around and like sort of instability, even though with, you know, a nice case around it, like probably gave you a lot of courage and comfort. You're comfortable with not knowing, not having things predictable.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually comfortable with that whole category of stuff, whatever that undefinable category of stuff that other people aren't comfortable with, and you want to help other people be comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Because you are. Does that make sense in some way?
Sure. Yeah. I think
so. Yeah. Because it's making me feel better because I'm like, I'm like really uptight. I get like, I don't know. Like, what are we going to do after this? What time is it?
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like I have to have everything really predictable to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Too much in that it's really nerdy, but I like the idea. I like what you're saying because I like the idea of being able to just embrace the unknowable and like just make it a thing that you can then pet.
Yeah. Or
and
explore.
Embrace.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. like be okay with. And so you're kind of championing that idea.
Yeah. I
like
the
that.
The world is really, right? really interesting. Uh-huh. Don't want anyone to feel like it's not, that's scary and sad.
Cool.
It's easier to deal with. I mean, the world is also really scary. So it's harder to deal with that if you don't also think that it's interesting and beautiful, you know,
mm-hmm.
just like wake up at 5 and go to the beach and see the sunrise. And yeah, I don't know. You can try to explain that, but
You embrace the mystery.
Yes.
I like very that. Much so. I like that. Okay. Wow. There's a lot to think about, Henry.
Yeah.
So do you talk too. About that in your day-to-day life, or are you just pretty much like when you're playing music? Like, music is very physical, isn't it? There's mm-hmm. a certain spirituality to playing music, isn't it? Because it's, I mean, like, visual art, you can kind of see like the paints or the brushes or the pencils, but music, you kind of is much more amorphous, right?
Yeah, it's ephemeral. It, you know, comes yeah. and goes, and it's a thing in the air.
Did you actually have music training? Did you get formal training?
A little bit. Yeah, not really as a kid, but when I got to college, I minored in music theory.
Oh, okay. Because like your music doesn't sound like, it sounds like you kind of know something like where it came from.
Yeah, I love.
You have the structure, of course.
I love arranging via like what comes to yeah. me, you know.
And you're also, I mean, guys, like you're also like very, it's not just the music, it's the whole thing. It's the whole package. It's mm-hmm. the videos. I posted some on Facebook with this note, the notice of the show, and the videos are very original. And that's why I also really seriously want you guys to go see Henry Flower on the 29th at the Sultan Room, because I can play the music all day. You can listen to Henry talk all day, but there really is something particular that you cannot get except from being in the room watching him perform. So we are going to have time for one more song, but I before we get to that song, I want to make sure that I remind you once again that you are listening to Dr. Lisa on Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere, because that's yes. all I've only gotten to those. And so here's what you should do. Like, if you're not at your desk and you want to hear us, you know that you can actually download the app to your phone. We have an iPhone app and we have a Android app. If you go to our site radiofreebrooklyn.org, and I'm gonna turn you over to Jocelyn, who I wanted yes. her to tell you a little bit more about We Color Live, because it's a really great business organization, and I've personally enjoyed many of their shows, and they've brought great musicians like Henry Flower and Julia Cummings and so many great people they've turned me on to. So I want her to tell you a little bit about that, remind you about the show, and then Henry's going to introduce, we're going to send you out in one of Henry's songs. Go ahead.
What can I say except for...
What do you do? Tell us.
We love music. We're fans of music. We put on shows. We make friends.
You produce films.
Films. We produce music videos. We've been on tour and created, we create communities and connections between people of all sorts of, I guess you say like positions in the industry. And I think it's about making connections and feeling a part of something. And, discovering new musicians.
I have this line for you too. We Color Live is here to elevate your experience. We cultivate a community of loyalty and love. And you know what? Yes. That's really true. I mean, if you go to a We Color Live event, I promise you folks, you will leave with brand yeah. new friends and a really great experience, fun music, just fun.
That's what it's about, right?
True. You bring the fun. Okay, and then remind us again about the details about the show, what time, where, how much, where are the tickets?
7 p.m. door. Tickets are on Eventbrite. You can find it on wecolorlive.com, Sultan Room's website, super easy.
What's the address there? Maybe I have it here.
234 Star Street, am I right?
Oh, God, I can't read this. It's at the Jefferson stop anyway. Sultan Room, yep. Jefferson stop. I have it on my Facebook page where I'll post it again.
And if you can't come to the show and you still want to know about Henry, we're doing a show in Los Angeles on February 24th at Moroccan Lounge. And the single comes out on Apple and Spotify mm-hmm. January 31st. And our music video we just finished is February 7th.
Ooh, so, a new music video.
Yeah, Vivo, mm-hmm. YouTube. You'll see it.
Who, and Henry, did you do the videos or you make them up, right? Mm-hmm. You have a really great visual sense.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing about partnering with We Color Live has been amazing. There's the music industry has changed so much, and it's sort of like, it's not a label, but it's doing all the things a label used to do. Mm-hmm. And so they produced it, and I co-directed with my brother. And it's amazing. It's about really, all the things that we were talking about.
Oh, wonderful.
It's very like hard on your sleeve. It's really beautiful and simple. And
I saw a draft and I cried.
I'm getting the chills hearing about it. So there's some weird vibe in the room. This is Blake. I can't wait to
it's
see
warm
it.
In here.
In all the ways.
And so what's the last song for today?
This is called Down in Carolina. It's the first song I wrote as Henry Flower, essentially. And it's the first song that came out for Henry Flower, and it means a lot to me. But it's about kind of remembering who the strength you have in curiosity as a kid.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Enjoy. Thanks so much, Lisa. Let's do this every week. I feel much better.
Okay.
Looking up from the